Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Christina Schnuckel, Wealth Advisor and Director of Client Experience for Ellenbecker Investment Group. Ellenbecker Investment Group is located in Waukesha, just north of I-94, between Highways 164 and Highway F in Ridgeview Corporate Park, and in the village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank Building across from Winkies. We also serve clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. Visit ellenbecker.com for more details. My guest today is one of Ellenbecker's own wealth advisors, Tammy Niemann. Tammy, I'm so excited to have you on today and to be interviewing you.
I'm excited as well. This is wonderful.
Good. Well, our topic today, I think, is a really good topic. We're talking about investing 101, or those foundational building blocks. And for our long-term listeners, you will have picked up on this theme of education. That's a core value at Ellenbecker Investment Group, that we're big on education, both for our employees, but mostly for our clients. So when we talk about Investing 101, and actually we have an educational event coming up, Tammy, that you're hosting on that. I'd love to hear from you on, why is this topic so important? And, you know, what are you hoping to put out there in the community to help investors, young people, those just reconnecting with their investment portfolio? What are you hoping to accomplish when you talk about investing 101?
Really, what I'm hoping to accomplish is what I accomplish with my clients when I meet with them. My primary goal is to make the complex simple. And what I have found so often with clients is they put off the whole financial planning process, the whole investing process, for years it takes them to make this appointment. When I ask why the delay, it's often because they're intimidated. There's this perception out there that everybody else knows more about investing than I do. And therefore they come in, they feel a little intimidated. Maybe they feel a little shameful, like, I should have known more. I often hear from clients that come in that said, you know, my parents never talked about this. I don't remember learning a lot about investing in school. And so I feel intimidated. So I just love to work with clients and just saying, listen, together, we're going to make the complex simple. And to be clear, honestly, we probably didn't hear about some of these investment strategies from our parents. If you think about it, the 401k was not a thing until about 1978. It didn't even, you know, grow in attraction really until the 80s. So our parents didn't talk about this. The Roth IRA wasn't a thing until 1997. So some of these principles seem so aloof. They seem so big. And I just really hope that in this Investment 101, that I can make the complex simple. And the greatest compliment somebody can give me during that time is if someone will, at the end, just say, hey, wait a minute, come back and re-explain this. Because I really want to empower my listeners just to feel that this is a dialogue, that there shouldn't be any shame, there shouldn't be any intimidation. We're really just wanting to empower you to make clear decisions. So that's what I hope to accomplish when we have this investment seminar.
I think that's a great goal. And I love what you said, Tammy, about making the complex simple, because I often, when we think about financial planning, I start from the standpoint of if an investor or a client doesn't understand their financial plan, they're not going to stick to it. And sticking to it and having that financial plan, that roadmap for where they're at today, where their goals are, and how they bridge that gap to get there is, I think, the most important contributor to their long-term success in meeting those goals,
100%.
whether they're retirement goals, buying a new house, paying off student loan debt, all of those different goals that might come into their financial plan. But I often say when the market gets really bumpy, you're going to panic if you don't understand your plan. So
Exactly.
these building blocks are so foundational. In fact, I often say even our clients that have been investing for decades, it's always great to go back to the basics and make sure that they understand everything from stocks, bonds, to why they have that fixed income component and their asset allocation.
Exactly. Every time I meet with a client, my goal is that they walk away with one piece of information that kind of gave them that aha moment. Oh, I understand that with greater clarity. And not that they walk away experts, but every time we meet, we're adding an additional educational component. So, and again, that additional focus increases impact, and it's going to be impactful on their plan if I can keep it focused and really simplify it. I always joke, Christina, I'm sure you do the same. I always say, I don't talk investmentese. I don't talk King James. I just talk plain language. At the end of the day, we're all journeying through this together.
For sure. Well, let's kick off with going kind of back to those building blocks, those foundations. And I often think of the building blocks of an investment portfolio being your stocks, your bonds, your mutual funds. But those are terms, as well as fixed income and equity, that get thrown around a lot, and clients don't always really understand the differences in terms of risk and return and just what those are made up of. So, Tammy, start there with us. Share with us a little bit of those differences in those terms.
You got it. You got it. So a stock simply is ownership in a company. So you own a little bit of a company. And the difficult thing with a stock is this: when you buy a company, you want to buy a good company, right? Stocks are not so much buy it, set it, and forget it. Let me give you an example. I'll use a lot of examples. I use lots of word pictures anytime I'm talking with this. If you bought into a company that only made 8 tracks back in the 70s, we would really hope that you still don't own that company, right? Because you want to make sure that it's a company that's staying relevant and cutting edge, right? So the difficulty is when you own a little bit of a stock, you're owning a company, you're kind of in it with them. The difficulty with the stock is, when do you sell it? Either the day before they cure cancer or the day they get sued for a bad medicine or a vaccine, right? So that's a little bit about a stock. It's an ownership in a company. It's never set it and forget it. Now, bonds simply is corporate debt, government debt, it's debt. So let's just say Amazon, we'll just say Amazon wanted to expand its footprint. It could go to the bank and borrow money, or it could say, hey, I would like to borrow 25,000. I'll pay an investor 5% and I'll pay off that after 5 years. So that's what a bond is. It is usually, it could be corporate debt, government debt. But for right now, just know it's a debt instrument that pays interest. So as long as you hold it to maturity, as long as you're buying good investment grade bonds, there's always risk. But as long as you're holding it to maturity, typically you can expect to get your principal back. And then mutual funds. Let's talk about mutual funds. So mutual funds is a pool of stocks that are professionally managed. So, it takes some, it brings some additional diversification because it's buying a bunch of different stocks in a pool and it's being professionally managed by a manager. And here's a statistic. So 46% of the time, mutual funds are beating the market. 46%, not always. So what mutual funds will do, it's a big pool of stocks, professionally managed, and it's a simpler way potentially to get into buying different holdings within the market. So we do have to be, here, one of those things at Ellen Becker is we want to make sure that we're buying good, high quality investments. When there's over 9,600 mutual funds that you can purchase in the United States, you want to make sure you have some good investment disciplines around what you choose, even with mutual funds. So that's kind of the high level understanding. Stocks is ownership, bonds is corporate debt that pays interest or government debt, and mutual funds is just a collection of different stocks that is professionally managed.
So I love what you focused on there, Tammy, of talking about that high quality and diversification, because those are two of our five investment pillars at Ellen Becker Investment Group. And I often describe high quality as those companies that have strong cash flow, low corporate debt, strong balance sheets. They're the types of companies that when we go through a market downturn, like for example, what we went through this past March with the tariffs, no one's selling those high quality stocks because everyone has a high degree of confidence that that stock is going to bounce back. I often say, for example, no one was dumping their Microsoft stock back in March. And it's because Microsoft's been around for a long time. They've paid a dividend for a long time, which indicates strong cash flow within the company. And they've been through their share of market downturns, and they've come out the other side. So I know when I think about that investment philosophy, our focus on high quality, we may miss the top of the market sometimes with focusing on high quality, but you're never going to hit the bottom. And that's really key. I often think of too the diversification that you mentioned is I usually explain for kind of our emerging investors, those just getting started, they're really working on accumulating assets. Mutual funds is the best way to go because it's giving you a lot of diversification. Which means less risk, less single company risk than just picking a handful of stocks, where you could pick some winners, you could pick some losers, where within a mutual fund, there's typically enough positions within that mutual fund, whether it's a stock mutual fund, a bond mutual fund, a alternatives mutual fund, there's usually enough positions that if a one, two, five, even 10 of those companies don't perform, the mutual fund is still going to be okay and you post those positive returns. So I love that you focused on that with the high quality and diversification. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back more with Tammy Niemann at Ellen Becker Investment Group talking about investing 101 in just a moment. Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Christina Schnuckel, Wealth Advisor and Director of Client Experience here at Ellen Becker Investment Group. And today I've been talking with Tammy Niemann, one of our wealth advisors here at Ellen Becker Investment Group. And Tammy's focusing right now on sharing some information with us around the foundations of finance. Investing 101 is what we call it here at Ellen Becker, and just how important it is to educate ourselves, whether we're new to the world of investing or we need a little bit of a refresh. Before the break, we were talking about kind of those building blocks, those components of an investment plan, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and understanding the benefits of high quality and diversification. And Tammy, I want to transition into a little bit talking about savings and kind of that hierarchy of where people start, because the stock market can be really exciting. So oftentimes I meet with maybe some newer investors or some younger investors who are really gung-ho about getting started investing, and they lose a little bit of steam when I bring up, do you have an emergency fund? And so I was hoping you could share a little bit of what you share with clients around emergency fund planning and where to start that savings hierarchy.
Absolutely. So I'm going to actually share a personal story of some of the worst investment advice I was ever given. And it's
Oh
efforts with this emergency fund. So honestly, I sat down with an investment advisor that's no longer in the industry, and it might have been great logical advice at the time. But I sat down with them in my early 20s. I had just bought my first house and I felt like I was 23. And I'm like, I want to get started on investing. And I remember what he said to me. He's like, I will not put $1 of money into retirement savings for you until you have 6 months of paycheck in the bank. And that sounds great, right? Like everybody can understand, oh, we should have some short-term savings. However, how it hit for me was I had student loans. I had just bought a house. I had a car payment. There, for me to get 6 months of paychecks into a short-term savings meant that took me nearly a decade, I felt. And it was this lost decade where I wasn't doing any investment savings because I was so focused on getting this short-term savings bucket. And it's not bad advice. I still think there's this rule of thumb that says you should have 3 to 6 months in short-term savings. And everybody can applaud that. But I would say if you do that in lieu of saving for retirement, you might find yourself a little behind. And that's certainly what happened for me. So because I think we all start life in a little bit more debt and a lot less extra income to save up. So when it comes to emergency funds, of course, 3 to 6 months sounds logical. That's a great goal, but not if it comes at the sacrifice of at least getting in the market and start saving. So here's something I would throw out there. Last year in the United States, 49% of households that experienced a financial emergency, the emergency cost less than $1,000. So that was half of us. I had an emergency. It cost less than $1,000. But here's another scary statistic. 60% of U.S. households, so 60% of us, have less than $1,000 saved. So here's what I would say as far as an emergency fund, 3 to 6 months is golden. But if you have at least $1,000, I feel like it's good to also start saving into some long-term retirement savings. Don't lose a whole decade like I did.
Absolutely. You know, we often talk to clients exactly about that, especially if they're offered any type of match on their retirement contributions through their employer, that the goal would be to find that happy medium between building up your cash reserves for that rainy day, but also saving for yourself, you know, paying yourself for that long term by making sure you get your money in that retirement fund and it's working. Because if your employer's matching, that's free money coming your way. A really important place to start. A statistic that I heard early on in my investing career really stuck with me. And it's that 96% of your investment returns come down to time in the market. So, you know, in your example, Tammy, with your lost decade, that really can have a long-term impact on your ability to meet those retirement goals.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, here's something we'll talk more about at our seminar, of course, but let's just take a look at this. So here is some facts. So if you're starting out at age 25, and you're saving $4,000 annually for 40 years. And let's just say a 6% growth. All right, that might be likely. When you come to retire at age 65, you'll have over $650,000 saved. Now, that is the lost decade that I lost. When I started in my 30s, so we'll give another example. If you did that same amount, just $4,000 a year, but you didn't start till age 35, when you come to retirement, you're only going to have $335,000 doing the same thing, just waiting 10 years. So I don't know about you, Christina. I've got two kiddos that are in college right now. And so we're talking about debt and, you know, they'll probably come out with a little college debt, but, you know, I'm really just encouraging them. I'm like, don't just be focused on the student loans and sacrifice saving right now for your retirement. Do not lose this decade. It is going to do so much good for you. So yes, time in the market is everything.
Yeah, time in the market is so important to not lose traction there. And you know, when you talk about that amount that you just saved in that statistic, Tammy, or that you shared, $4,000 a year, in the grand scheme of things, that's not that much, right. You know, when you spread it out over a monthly basis. So, you know, with most of our savers, our investors, figuring out what you can do on a monthly basis and automating that savings, whether it's through your 401k plan or if you don't have an employer-sponsored retirement plan, doing something on your own, you'll feel it the first month or two. But after that, you adjust. Your cash flow adjusts. You're not going to notice it much. So doing that automatically, or kind of, I'd say, on autopilot, is a great way to get that savings in there too, because it doesn't take... You know, it doesn't take thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to add up over time to get that return if you're in the market and you're in it for the long term.
Yeah, agreed. $4,000 a year, that's $300, a little over $300 a month, $333. And, you know, I mean, that doesn't, I don't want to sneeze at that by any means, but that's $83 a week. So it's one of those things, but I like what you said. It's actually $76, pardon me. But I like what you said. The automation just makes it so much easier. If we can just set it and forget it as far as that money coming out of our paycheck, and then just challenge ourselves, just taking it up, clicking it up. A lot of our 401k companies or administrators have a election that you can make that increases your participation in your employer plan by 1% a year. So I like to always encourage my young investors to say, all right, do what you can at least, but every year just challenge yourself. That 1%, I promise you, you will not miss it. And it's so much easier to save when it's automated. And you know what I also like about the automation is that, to your point, it's dollar cost averaging. And so what's awesome about that is that you're participating in 24, maybe 26 market cycles a year. So what I mean by that is this. If you invested money, going back to what you had said earlier, top of the show, in March when we had the tariff talks and the market was down at one point this year, nearly 14%. If you had invested money when the market was down in that March or April, you've experienced a lot of great gains. So that's what's wonderful about saving automatically through your paycheck, because you're participating in a lot of market cycles, which increases the likelihood that you're going to buy low. And we know we all want to buy low. We want to buy stuff when it's on clearance. We want to buy stuff when we go, when it's a little more affordable, if you will. So
for sure. Good. Well, Tammy, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more on Investing 101 with Tammy Niemann after our break. Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Christina Schnuckel, Wealth Advisor and Director of Client Experience here at Ellen Becker Investment Group. Today, my guest is Tammy Niemann, one of my fellow advisors here at Ellen Becker Investment Group. And we've been chatting today about Investing 101 and the foundation of a good estate plan and investment understanding. Right before the break, Tammy, we were talking a little bit about dollar cost averaging and how to hit those various points in the market and how beneficial that market volatility can actually be over time to long-term investors. That market volatility actually, in a big way, contributes to your success. But with that market volatility, I think we all know that there's an emotional component to investing that is really difficult for everyone. And that can be, I think, our worst enemy when it comes to reaching those long-term goals is, you know, that emotional component to investing. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to take just a couple minutes to talk about kind of that emotional investing cycle and how it lines up with, you know, what the market does in the long term.
You're right. And I always like to tell clients, we can make money in a down market. We can make money in an up market. We just got to know where, right? I think that's one of the most dangerous parts of investing is, and I always want to just tell my clients, like, we put together a good plan, we're going to stick to the plan. And sometimes a big part of my job is really just reminding that we've got a good solid plan put together. But I will tell you, sometimes fear gets the best of all of us. So we've all heard the roller coaster analogy, don't jump off mid roller coaster. But let me give you another analogy that we can just kind of talk about. I had an experience where some clients might have wanted to go to all cash because they got a little afraid. So let's talk a little bit about that. I was born in 1973. All right. So if my dad was really generous and he said, you know, I want to make sure that someday I can buy my daughter a home. So I'm going to take $32,000 and I'm going to put it in a lockbox for cash. And someday I'm going to give her the key to that lockbox and she's going to be able to buy a home. Let's just say he did that. He was saying he was being very generous. In 1973, the average cost of a home was $32,000. So he did that, and then he gave me the key at my 50th birthday and said, here you go. Go buy a house. I would go into the lockbox, I'd open it up, there'd be 30 grand, like, thanks for the down payment, right? But if he would have put that same amount of money in just like the S&P and it just had made an average return, and then he gave me the account, it would be worth over $472,000. Now think about it. In 50 years, the market has gone up, it's gone down, and we've had a lot of volatility. But just sticking with the plan would have resulted in me actually being able to buy the house. So fear to me is one of the biggest motive, one of the most dangerous things when we don't understand the plan. And that's why I'm so educational, just making sure you understand that we put together a plan that can weather through some of this stuff. So I don't know if you would agree with me, Christina, in all of your years of investing. Is that kind of what you see as well?
For sure. And I think that education piece is key, Tammy. And I haven't spent my whole career at Ellen Becker. I've been here for a little over 12 years now. And the biggest difference I can highlight for clients is because we focus on the holistic financial planning, our clients really do understand the plan that's in place for the good years and the bad years in the market.
That's right.
And how we're protecting them in those down years versus, the firm I was at previously did a fantastic job with the investments, but there wasn't any planning component, which meant when the market dropped, whether it was 1% or 20% in the market going down, there was a high level of panic in clients wanting to get out of the market. And we just don't have that with our clients here. And I feel like it's because they're really well educated and they understand their plan. But, how we prevent that fear selling is making sure that they understand that we are going to go through down markets. I tell every single client that I work with, we will go through a down market. Your stocks will go down. I just don't know exactly when that's going to happen. So we're going to prepare like that's always around the corner. And we start with having 5 to 7 years worth of what they need to spend from their portfolio set aside in high quality fixed income investments that are going to be much more stable in a volatile market. And that puts us in a situation where we never have to sell one of their stocks when the market's down. Because as you said, we want to sell high, not low. We don't want to sell low with their stocks, but that gives us time diversification. And I feel like that piece is the number one component to easing that fear, okay, and helping clients to understand that they can make it through 5 to 7 years of a down market. And we do still hear, when we enter in a market, like for example, even in March, oh my goodness, it's going to take us a decade to recover from this. And the truth is it never has. The longest the market's ever been down is about 3.5 years, and that's really only happened twice in the history of the stock market, the Great Depression and the Great Recession. And everything else has been less than that. So 5 to 7 years gives us roughly double that amount of time, of protection and puts us in a place where their needs are met. They can still spend from the portfolio, and we're doing it from a place in the portfolio that isn't going to impact long term the ability for their stocks to bounce back when the market does bounce back. And I think the other thing that helps clients understand that too when the market goes down is trying to help them separate what we're hearing about the economy and what the market itself is going to do. You know, we often say the biggest drivers of the market long term are interest rates and corporate earnings. And the market is, you know, what we call a leading indicator versus a lagging indicator of the economy. So trying to make investment decisions based on what you're seeing economically can often be like driving forward, looking in the rearview mirror. Like you're not going in the place that you think you're going. So, you know, that's one of the biggest challenges that I think investors have. And I would also say, I think it's one of the biggest challenges that we've had from a young emerging investor standpoint is, you know, some of those investors, they weren't around in the 90s or the 2000s to see some of the strong markets, but they were around to know what their parents went through in 07 through 09 during the financial crisis. And it instilled a lot of fear in them. So right. I think part of our job as investment advisors is to help our younger investors have that longer term perspective and understand that they too can be successful in the market. We just have to help them find that right allocation where they can weather the volatility and keep the focus on what that upside is going to be for them in long term.
You know, another thing with our young investors, I often, when we think about behavioral finance here, is FOMO. Fear of missing out. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I've heard, you know, well, I'd like to invest in this. I'd like to invest in that. And that's great, but we don't always want to chase the bright and shiny penny. We really need to understand what we have, why we have it, and get some long-term track record. I remember being really young in my early 20s and one of my coworkers who I really respected came in. And he's like, oh, everybody has to buy this stock. They have to buy this stock. And I didn't know anything about this stock, but every one of us had the fear of missing out. So we all put money in here. And I'll tell you, I put my entire life savings, which was all of $500 at the time, into the stock, and it went nowhere fast. And so it was one of these things, like sometimes we learn. So that fear of missing out, if I would have taken a minute and did research, there's no way in the world I would have ever given that $500 to that stock. So I think that's another thing. It's fear and then fear of missing out. They both are bad drivers of behavioral finance. So
for sure, for sure. Well, Tammy, we're going to take a short break and we'll be back more with Investing 101 in just a moment. Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Christina Schnuckel, Wealth Advisor and Director of Client Experience here at Ellen Becker Investment Group. And today I've been chatting with one of our own wealth advisors, Tammy Niemann, on talking about Investing 101, which is really diving into the basics of a financial plan and empowering yourself to understand what can seem sometimes like an overwhelming topic, but educating yourself and taking control of your finances. So far, Tammy, we've covered a lot of groundwork. We've talked about some of the foundational terms used in investing, such as stocks and bonds and mutual funds, and the importance of an emergency fund and saving, as well as talking about that emotional component, which is the biggest challenge for all of us when it comes to a volatile market.
Right.
But I wanted to switch gears just for a little bit and talk about how taxes and proper tax planning can really benefit or impact the financial plan. We're a little bit unique here at Ellen Becker in that we do have CPAs on staff who work with our clients on their tax plan. And the reason we do that is because we see such a huge benefit in making sure that your investments and your taxes are coordinating and working together towards that goal. But I'm wondering, Tammy, if you can share just a little bit about how understanding your tax bracket can really help build that foundation to your investment and your financial plan.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's been very beneficial, like you said, is if I can walk right down the hallway, talk to one of our CPAs, and just talk about how can I be most tax efficient. when we are tax efficient with our retirement withdrawals, it gives us portfolio longevity. So we will sit down with our clients and we will plan what, and we'll bring in one of our CPAs and we'll talk about how we can maximize certain tax brackets. So a lot of times, what that actually looks like is for our retirees, it's taking tax deferred dollars. So most of us, when we're working, we're saving in our 401ks. That's what we see most often. Well, when we're saving in our 401ks, that money has never ever been taxed. So during retirement, when that money comes out, we have to pay taxes on it as ordinary income. So some of our strategies really is sometimes when we get into retirement, we're in a lower tax bracket. Maybe we're in the 12% tax bracket. And what that means is that you can have up to a certain amount of income, depending if you're married or single, somewhere between $48,000 to $96,000 of taxable income, and at only 12% tax. Now, maybe when you're working, that might have been closer to 24% to 26%. So it's a more tax efficient. So sometimes what that looks like is us taking money from that tax deferred, pulling it out, paying some taxes on it, and doing a Roth conversion. So sometimes, and that just puts it into another type of an account. So when we can do some of this in the most tax efficient way, it gives us portfolio longevity. And with some of the new opportunities that we're seeing now and some of the tax changes that we've seen with the recent bill, it's going to afford us the at least the next 3 years to really utilize that strategy even greater. So, been very excited to talk to some of my clients, and we recently even did a tax seminar to kind of outline how that might impact. But for our retirees, a lot of it was good news and allows us to be much more tax efficient.
Yeah, taxes is oftentimes something that I tell clients is going to be their biggest expense in retirement. And so we have to plan for it well now and set themselves up for flexibility and success. When we do talk about those taxations, you know, Tammy, I like how you said that money in the 401k, if it's going into that traditional portion, it's never been taxed before and it's going to be taxed as ordinary income when it comes out. And the biggest question I often get from clients is, well, what tax rate am I going to pay when I bring that, take that out? And that's the harder question to answer, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Because the answer is it depends. It depends on what your other income sources are at that time, whether you've got a pension, social security, investment income, filing jointly, all of those components that affect your income, and where the tax brackets are at that time.
Million
So
dollar question, yeah.
I often tell clients, I'm like, when we look at this 401k, you know, you may have 500,000 saved for retirement in this account, but a portion of this belongs to Uncle Sam, only he's not going to tell you what portion is his and what portion is yours until you actually get to retirement.
That's
And
good.
I think that's the biggest shift in our industry that I've seen in the last couple of years is it used to always be this thought that you'll be in a lower tax bracket in retirement. And that's just not the case for everyone, and in particular, clients who get to retirement and really only have that pre-tax bucket represented. So there's such a need now to work with investors on giving themselves time flexibility when it comes to those investment portfolios of making sure that they're saving money not only in their pre-tax 401ks or IRAs, but we're getting Roth money that's growing tax-free and getting some taxable money for them too, so that by the time they get to retirement, based on what their needs are, we can really kind of pick and choose which bucket those distributions come out of to hopefully control those taxes for them.
Right, exactly.
So going back to the basics, Tammy, on this, so I just threw around the traditional, the Roth, those components. Can you share a little bit around those types of accounts, whether 401ks or IRAs, and what factors influence your decisions on where you should be saving those dollars?
Yeah, absolutely. So the traditional IRA and or a 401k, that is all tax deferred money. So When you are working, that's probably one of the first things that we'll recommend is to fully fund your employer sponsor plan, your 401k, maybe it's your 403b if you're working for a nonprofit, to fully fund that. And again, that's going to be tax deferred. So you get a little tax break now. So the difference really, if I were to make the complex simple, the difference between traditional IRA and Roth IRA is you pay the tax now or you pay the tax later. And what would influence that decision is what income bracket do you think you'll find yourself in when you retire? If you know you're going to be a high income earner, even in retirement, because of your good savings habits, et cetera, that might influence whether you choose one versus the other. We do love Roth IRAs, and here's what's awesome about a Roth IRA. So, first off, the growth in a Roth IRA grows tax-free. So, that's wonderful. It's inherited tax-free. And third, it's not subject to something called RMDs, required minimum distributions, which many of us will need to take somewhere between the ages of 73 to 75. So, we love the tax efficiencies that a Roth provides. However, there are some income brackets, some thoughts in regards to Roth. If you make a certain amount of money, you may not be able to participate in a Roth directly. So then we need to look at our employer sponsor plan. Sometimes there is an ability to pay or to contribute to your employer plan via Roth. But what factors go into it is, do you want to pay the taxes today or tomorrow? Largely depends upon your conviction. Will your income be greater or less in retirement? So it's not always a simple answer to give, but that kind of just makes that complex simple and just says taxes now or later.
Texas now or later, for sure, for sure. Tammy, do you have a recommendation of where you start with clients as far as what account they should be saving in? Let's say they've got a, let's say that they're young, they're starting out fresh, they've got a 401k with a match component to it, but the 401k doesn't offer any Roth savings, but they also have goals of maybe saving for a house. You know, what would you recommend as kind of a starting place for someone like that?
So that's a great example. So this is where I usually say, if you need the money inside of 18 to 24 months, I'm not certain that, so in your example of buying a home, maybe if it's short term, 18 to 24 months, maybe that's not something that needs to be invested in the market. And if it is, it needs to be invested in a nice cash holding, something that isn't going to have a lot of ups and downs. The last thing we want you to do is invest your down payment in the market. And then we had March or April that we've been talking about all show long is happen, and you need that money. And the market's down 14%. So any short-term savings goals inside of 24 months or 2 years probably can be put into some type of cash holding. That could be a high-yield savings account. We could help with putting together a T-bills, CDs, a cash holding that basically bears interest. After that, it's a great idea to maximize your 401k at work. Then I would like to see you maximize any Roth contributions if you're eligible. And that would be kind of that savings funnel that we talk about. And we would kind of customize as we work with a client. But really simply said, inside of 24 months, not in the market, then you maximize your 401k and then a Roth. Our young investors can put up to $7,000 a year into the Roth component as long as their income is qualifying under the thresholds of income contributions.
Well, Tammy, you've shared such great information today, and I hope what our listeners are coming away with is twofold. Is one that everyone deserves and needs a financial plan, and
Right.
that their lack of confidence or feeling like they're behind shouldn't be a roadblock to them taking control of their financial life. And a great way to start would be joining you for your seminar at Investing 101 that's coming up on August 14th here at Ellen Becker Investment Group in the evening from 5:30 to 7 p.m. So I'd like to encourage anyone who's listening, this seminar is open to the public. You don't have to be an Ellen Becker client to join, but share it with your friends, your family, your coworkers. Help them become empowered on what those investment decisions could be like and to start taking control over their finances. So Tammy, thank you again so much for sharing this information with us today.
Absolutely. Hope to see you all at the Investment 101 on August 14th.
Great. Well, Money Sense airs on Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m. and on Sundays from 12 to 1 p.m. If you've enjoyed today's show and want to learn more about EIG or our upcoming events, please visit ellenbecker.com or call us at 262-691-3200. As always, I hope that I've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen.